way to the rideshare pickup area on the arrivals level. 12 people were waiting there, a mixture of men and women, young and old. They were spread out, apparently at random, no sign of forming an orderly line. Some had multiple suitcases with them. Others, just a purse or a briefcase. The only thing they seemed to have in common was that they were all staring at their phones. A car pulled up to the curb, a black Tesla. A woman in a business suit waved to the driver, then climbed inside. Reacher knew that the phones had something to do with summoning cars and with pairing the drivers and the passengers, but he had no idea how the system worked. He scanned the remaining 11 faces to see which seemed most approachable when he sensed someone walking up behind him. He looked around and saw Knight. She pointed at a yellow plastic hut, about 12 feet by 8, that looked like it had been abandoned in the middle of the sidewalk, 20 yards away. She said, "Come with me." Knight got to the hut first. It had no windows. Its edges were rounded, and a sign above the single door read, "Smoke Shack." Knight opened the door, looked inside, coughed, then said, "Come on." She stepped inside. Reacher followed. The interior of the hut stank of cigarette smoke. The walls and ceiling were stained orange. There was nowhere to sit, and the ashtrays that ran along the walls at waist height, like narrow troughs, were all overflowing. Knight said, "Horrible place. Let's make this quick. Tell me what you think the report is about." Reacher said, "Everyone just calls it the report. I don't even know its title." "That's not what I asked. Listen, a penny dropped just now when I was walking to security. Something divine said, or let slip. I think she gave the game away. If we're on the same page, I'll stay. I'll help." Reacher took a moment to think. Then he said, "Department of Energy." Knight nodded. Reacher said, "The reports about nuclear weapons. Specifically, I think, the design for a new warhead." "I got the weapons part. The Department of Energy is responsible for the nuclear arsenal for some odd reason. Where do you get the new warhead from?" "I'm speculating. It could be anything. But something about the name Cone Dynamics has been bugging me. This morning I realized why. In World War II, the Brits began an atomic weapons program that wound up getting swept into the Manhattan Project. They needed to keep it top secret, so they had to find a way to account for all the expenditure. So they created a fake company as a front. It was called Tube Alloys. They figured it was innocuous, boring, not the kind of thing to attract attention. Cone Dynamics strikes me as similar. You know what this means. We have to call Divine right now. You can't go rogue on this. It's too important." "I'll call her. There's one thing I need to nail down first, to make sure she gets the full picture. If she doesn't have it already." Reacher was first out of the hut. He hadn't enjoyed the atmosphere inside, but he hadn't hated it, and it had made an impact. It had been decades since he'd smoked a cigarette, years since he'd thought about having another one. But right then, he could have been tempted. Reacher led the way back toward the pickup area. As they came close, he turned to Knight and said, "I guess you've done this before? Used the Uber app?" She said, "I'm not dead. And I'm not a hermit, so yes." "Good. I want you to—" Knight's phone rang. She glanced at the screen, then held it out for Reacher. She said, "Do I need to start billing you for the airtime?" Reacher hit the answer key and Walwork's voice came on the line. He said, "This is awkward. Before I tell you what I found, I need to ask you something, but it's something I can't ask you about. I'm right up on the limit of crossing a line here. Truth is, I might have crossed it already." "I can't tell you what to do, Walwork. If you're worried, Hang up the phone. I don't want to put you in a bind. All I can say is, I bet that if someone could have provided information that stopped the Rosenbergs before they passed information to the Soviets, even if they had to cross a line, I bet they wouldn't have regretted it. Did you pick the Rosenbergs at random? No. The line was silent for a moment. Then Walwerk's voice returned. A few days ago, a request came in for information relating to the sales or shipping of gold. It came from counterintelligence. I called a buddy who works there. He told me three shipments had been traced to an address in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I'll give it to you. It's basically an aircraft hangar at the executive airport. Belongs to a little outfit that hops between the mainland and the Bahamas. Passengers and cargo. Thanks, Walwerk. We'll be discreet, but this could be critical. Don't thank me. Just leave me alone. I'm going to lie down now and have a heart attack. Before you do, there's one more thing I need. I've told you, stop this. I'm not going to keep... I have a name, an alias. I think Vidich is using it. I need to know if any transport has been booked for the next couple of days that corresponds. The name is John Nunn Austin. You know you'll get a million hits. Filter by destination. Fort Lauderdale, or anywhere less than 2 hours away in a cab. Knight took her phone back. She said, John Austin? That's the alias Vidich used when he booked your room at the motel. Reacher said, right. But he didn't mention it at the time. He doesn't know that I know about it. I'm thinking, if he's using the IDs he left in his wallet to lead the Bureau by the nose, what is he using for himself? It has to be one he believes is still under the radar. Okay, and why Fort Lauderdale? Reacher told her about the gold. You think someone is building a stash of gold to trade for the report? I think it's possible. Reacher started moving toward the rideshare area again. Now I want you to do whatever you would normally do if you wanted to get a ride to the park. Knight moved closer to the edge of the sidewalk and pulled out her phone. She opened her Uber app, entered the address for the park, confirmed her current location, and picked a luxury car. She figured she'd find a way to bill Reacher for the extra cost later. Reacher was on the sidewalk behind Knight. The height difference between Vidich and any agent who was likely to be tailing him was probably significantly smaller, so Reacher factored in an estimate. He moved up as close behind her as he could without attracting attention. He stood beside her and pretended to check the license plate of a car that had just pulled up. He moved to her other side and acted like he was watching for any new cars arriving. A couple of minutes later, a car did pull up. An Audi A8. Knight opened the rear door and climbed in. Reacher looped around and got in the other side. Knight said, "What could you see?" Reacher said, "Nothing." "Were you trying to hide the screen?" "Not at all. I was holding it like I always do. Unless I was talking to someone or texting with them. And then the Uber app is hidden anyway." They made good time into the city. The traffic was kind, and the driver took detours around the parts where congestion was starting to build. He checked his mirror at one point to make sure Reacher was watching him, then said, "This is my own route. I'm not following the phone. I could get in trouble, but I want you guys to get where you're going without any delays." Reacher had nothing to say to that. Knight said, "Thank you. Very good. We'll make sure that's reflected in the tip." Reacher figured the spot they got out at was close enough to where Vidich would have been dropped off the day before. The park didn't look exactly as he had expected. It was wide and open, with bushes and shrubs surrounding neatly trimmed grass. The air was heavy with the scent of tree blossoms. They set out along a path opposite the mouth of Thurman Avenue. It was a straight shot south. Reacher figured that if they kept going, they would come out to the east of the softball field he'd waited next to last time. So instead, they took a diagonal fork that cut through a stand of mature trees. A moment later, he caught a glimpse of the north pavilion. They moved closer, and he saw it was an open structure with 8 pillars supporting an octagonal roof. A cupola perched on top and a weather vane sprouted from its peak. The whole thing was painted green and cream, and the center was full of picnic tables with attached benches. A half dozen more were scattered around the outside. Reacher circled the pavilion, observing it from all angles, then continued around the oval to the south, the way Vidic had done after he had deposited the memory stick. Night followed. They came to the second pavilion. It was just like the first, except for the shape of its cupola. This one had a rounded dome and no protruding vane. Reacher didn't like it. He would have made them identical. Reacher spotted the trash can where the man in the hoodie had dropped the backpack full of money. He walked toward it, picturing himself executing a covert exchange. He imagined something had spooked him. He stopped and turned 360 degrees, checking his escape routes, looking for places to hide. Then he turned to Knight and said, "Enough. We need to talk." She said, "To Divine?" Reacher said, "To each other. We have a decision to make." Chapter 32. Reacher and Knight selected a picnic table that was well away from any other pedestrians. Reacher faced north, Knight faced south, and they sat slightly offset so that they could make sure no one crept up on them and eavesdropped. Neither of them spoke for a moment. Then Knight said, "So what was that all about? The cab from the airport and the walk in the park?" Reacher said, "I like to find patterns in things, harmonies. If something is out of whack, it rings alarm bells." "What's out of whack about taking an Uber? Covering the last part on foot when there isn't a road for it to drive on?" "Nothing. Not in itself. But take the broader view. Vidic drove the wrong way, then flew. He used an alias. Either that was an attempt to elude the FBI or to get their attention. Either way, it was a ruse. Then he picked up a tail in the airport, let himself be followed to the pavilion, performed some incredibly clumsy pseudo-fieldcraft with the memory stick, waited until it had been intercepted, then disappeared into thin air. Look at this place. Losing a tail here would not be easy. So he's better at some things than others. That's not a crime, especially if he's self-taught. I think he's good at all these things. And I think he's been very well trained. I don't follow. I think Vidic is an FBI agent. He can't be. The Bureau's not incompetent. They wouldn't have infiltrated 2 agents into the same team. I'm not saying they did." Knight stood up and took a step away from the table. She said, "What the hell is wrong with me? I should have gone to Chicago to make sure the man who killed my father gets hauled away in handcuffs. Instead, I stayed here with a crazy person. We know that Vidic isn't an agent." Reacher said, "Do we?" "We just agreed there can't be 2. We know Gibson was an agent, therefore Vidic isn't one." "Are you sure about Gibson?" "Your friend Walwerk confirmed it." Reacher shook his head. "Walwerk confirmed there was an agent, not who it was. And Divine told me the agent's cover name was omitted from the file. That's a breach of procedure, but too common to raise any eyebrows before it was too late." "Who cares about the cover name? Gibson's prints proved it. They were pulled from the wreck of his car and matched with FBI personnel records. You can't fake that." "Walk it back. Vidic pulled Gibson and me out of Gibson's Lincoln. Then he was alone with it before he pushed it through the guardrail. He could have wiped Gibson's prints and planted his own. Some DNA, too. A drop of blood, something like that. easily accounted for by the accident, and he knew they'd be found. Devine told me that modern cars have a thing that shuts off the fuel supply in an accident to stop them from catching on fire or exploding. If Vidic is an agent, he'll know that too. So it was a calculated risk, not a fluke. Knight was silent for a moment, then she sat back down. There's a way the pieces could fit, I guess. There is. Start at the motel. Who was there? Gibson. Vidic. The agent's handler. And the hooker. Right. Vidic said he saw Gibson leaving a meeting with the handler in room one. But that can't be true because Gibson was with the hooker in room two. You think it was Vidic with the handler in room one, and Gibson who saw him leave? Reacher nodded. They were both going to regular meetings at the motel. Both were flying under the radar, but for different reasons. The hooker always had the same room. The handler switched hers up. It was only a matter of time before they wound up next door to each other. Knight said, that's how Vidic was able to describe the handler so well, and her car, and why he lied about when he left the motel. He needed a plausible explanation for knowing those things, so he claimed to have hung back and watched. So Vidic was scared that Gibson was onto him. He probably followed him to the parking lot, but he couldn't confront him because you were there, dealing with the wannabe car thieves and hitching a ride. Can you remember how Gibson seemed at that moment? Was he freaked out? Angry? Reacher paused. He closed his eyes, then nodded. Yes, I can remember. He was pissed about the car thieves, but not scared or agitated or impatient. Doesn't sound like someone who just discovered a spy in his camp. And it explains why he gave me a ride. The idea of an agent doing that never sat right. Remember what you said about people projecting their own actions onto others? That goes for thoughts, too, and fears. Vidic would have assumed that Gibson would be suspicious when he saw him leaving a woman in a motel room. But Gibson would have thought Vidic was just there for some hanky-panky of his own. This whole thing could have been caused by a horrible misunderstanding. A lot of tragedies are. Gibson's behavior at the switchback fits that theory, too. He hit the gas when he saw Vidic closing in, sure. But in a regular macho, not wanting to be seen as a slow driver type way. Not in a serious attempt to run for his life. So the crash was an unfortunate accident? Unfortunate for Gibson. A godsend for Vidic. How so? A civilian was dead. Vidic wanted to get away and start over with Paris. Ditching Fletcher and Kane was one thing, killing them even, so that they couldn't describe him to anyone if they ever got busted in the future. But the Bureau? If they knew he was MIA, they'd never stop looking. He had to make them believe he was dead. Hence the fire. We assumed it was to make sure the body couldn't be identified as an agent's, but we had it backward. It was to make sure the body couldn't be identified as a civilian's. So the Bureau would have to go with the circumstantial evidence and order a new star for the Wall of Honor. It all fits. Not quite. There's one piece missing. The most important piece. This all depends on Vidic not only being an agent, but also deciding to turn his back on the Bureau, on the law, on what's right. That's a lot to accuse a person of when you don't have a shred of real evidence. We need to know more about his state of mind. I don't think we do. Here's the clincher. If Vidic isn't an agent, how did he know the codename Albatross? Knight didn't reply. Reacher said, in a way revealing it was a smart play. He apparently watched me intervene when I saw some guys trying to steal a car, so it was a decent bet that I'd drop a dime to let the Bureau know about a dead agent. Using the real code name made it more likely they'd take it seriously and follow up, which he wanted them to do, so that he'd be officially recorded as DOA. But how did he know the real name? Knight said, he claimed he'd heard the handler say it to Gibson. But she couldn't have. Gibson wasn't with her. He was with the hooker in the next room. There's no other explanation. Vidic turned. I was wrong before, Knight said. Vidic wasn't under too long. He was in too deep. He couldn't get back to the light. It's kind of tragic, honestly. Knight handed her phone to Reacher and he dialed Devine's number. She picked up after 5 rings. She said, Detective? It's Reacher. Oh, what do you need? After we spoke back in the Ozarks, Knight sent you the pictures she'd taken of Gibson's face. I'm guessing you haven't passed that on to his handler yet. I'd need to check on that. Lots of plates spinning here, Reacher. You need to show it to her immediately. Why? Show her. Then pull the CCTV from the Oklahoma City or St. Louis airport. Find some footage of Vidic. Show that to the handler as well. I don't see where you're going with this. You will. Okay, then I'll get right on it. Why don't I believe you? Devine didn't answer. Reacher said, I'm not going on record as having drawn any kind of conclusion here, or as having any knowledge of this situation. But you asked for my advice in that meeting, and my advice is that every investigation needs a solid foundation. You need to be sure of the identities of your principals. You should look to that right now. You have the tools. Knight sent them to you. Use them. Don't waste any more time. Okay. Well, thanks for your advice. Now, if there isn't anything, there are 4 other things. First, the document you recovered in St. Louis isn't all of Vidic's material. He split the report, let you retrieve part of it to buy himself room to operate, and is going to sell the rest. The line went silent for a moment. Then Devine said, That's a mighty big claim. Can you back it up? Reacher said, Think about it. How hard was it to get wind of the sale, to track Vidic to St. Louis and then the park? Why did he fly when he could have driven? How did he disappear so easily as soon as the memory stick was intercepted? And here's the key. The report was supposed to be worth a fortune. You know what's in it. I don't. So tell me, is $2 million a fair price? He was short of time, and the price was $2 million because that's all they could put their hands on. They stole it from the safe at the cave. How can you be sure? If I'm wrong, so what? You throw more resources at catching Vidic, who needs to be caught anyway. You save a little time. If I'm right, he's out there right now hawking the rest of that report. You can stop that from happening. Devine didn't respond. Reacher said, Second, forget about the flight from Chicago to Alaska. Forget about those aliases I gave you for Vidic. They're junk. He wants you to think he'll be on that plane. He wants you on a wild goose chase. What makes you send Gibson's picture to Albatross's handler? Pull the airport CCTV. Then you'll understand. Damn it, Reacher, just tell me. You wouldn't believe me. You need to join the dots for yourself. Third, I think Vidic is using a different alias. John Nunn Austin. You should check flights, car rentals, hotels. You know the drill. Where did finally someone has shipped a bunch of gold to an airplane hangar in Fort Lauderdale, Florida? I'll send you the address. It's possible that another section of the Bureau is watching it. You should tell them to be on the lookout for Vidic. It's a long shot, but we know from past deals he has a preference for gold and is selling something very valuable. What other section? Counterintelligence. I can't just butt into their investigation out of the blue and start making requests. Why not? What's more important, retrieving the report or following protocol? Fine, I'll think about it. Don't think, do. Reacher, you've done the right thing bringing these issues to me. Don't think I'm not appreciative. It's just that there are a lot of moving parts here. I need to keep the machine working efficiently, not stick a spanner in the works, even if it's with the best of intentions. Which brings me to a very important point. You need to let me run with it from here. I get that these kinds of things used to be in your wheelhouse. They're not anymore. Don't go meddling in areas that are beyond your sphere. Understood? Reacher said nothing. He hung up and dialed Walwork's number. He wanted to check on flight records for John Austin, but got dumped straight into voicemail. Knight took her phone back and said, "What does your gut tell you? Is Divine going to act?" Reacher shrugged. He said, "It's 50-50. If she shows Gibson's picture to the handler, then the dominoes will fall pretty fast. If she soft pedals that, maybe nothing will happen." "No luck with Vidic's plane tickets?" "No. And we don't know if he's planning on flying anyway. Hey, you had tags in King's guys' cars that you could track on your phone. Are they still in place?" "You think those guys are still around? I bet Kane stood them down. He must be trying not to draw attention. The smaller the group, the better in this situation." "I'm sure he stood them down. He sent them away in the van full of contraband from the cave, as a reward, as a cover, who knows. But I think he kept their cars. Vidic needed to get to Oklahoma City so that he could fly here. Kane and Paris needed to drive here with the 2 million. I want to know where those cars are now." "The guys could have found the tags by now and ditched them." Knight opened her phone, then swiped and tapped the screen. "Vidic might be more observant." "Wait. No, here they are. Both of them. The first is at the Oklahoma City airport, just as you thought. And the second is..." "Okay. Interesting. It's at the Indianapolis airport." "Pass me your phone. We need Walwork to factor Indy into his search as the point of origin." Reacher got Walwork's voicemail again. He left a message, then turned back to Knight. He said, "So, decision time. Stay here and wait for intel, or roll the dice and head to Florida." Knight shrugged. "This is a good location, reasonably central. But I hate sitting still. What do you think?" "An investigation needs momentum. We should go." Chapter 33. They were closer to the south exit from the park than where they'd come in, so Reacher and Knight hustled along the nearest path, which led diagonally to Arsenal Street. Knight used her phone to call an Uber. A car arrived after 3 minutes, a silver Toyota Camry. The driver was maybe 25. He was from the Gambia, and he talked incessantly about trees. His dream was one day to return home with seeds from every species of tree in the United States and plant a whole new forest. Good luck with that, Reacher thought. While the driver talked, Knight switched apps and bought plane tickets to Fort Lauderdale. Reacher paid her back in cash, a lot of cash. First class, one way, last minute. They were every airline's dream customers that day. At the airport, Knight led the way to the airline's check-in desk and had the agent print paper boarding passes for them both. She didn't need one, but Reacher had no phone, and she didn't want to draw attention to the fact. He had enough strikes against him when it came to security screening. Knight breezed through pre-check security and went in search of coffee. Reacher dragged through the regular line. When the TSA guy saw Reacher's expired passport, he raised an eyebrow, but he knew the rule and waved him through. Reacher caught up with Knight and grabbed a large cup of coffee for himself. Then they made their way to the gate and waited for boarding to begin. Reacher had forgotten how much he disliked airports. There were people everywhere, milling around, stopping for no reason, dawdling aimlessly, dragging unwieldy suitcases. He suspected that if hell exists, it resembles an eternal trek through a departure hall. Reacher's pass said he was in boarding group one, but four other categories of customers were called before him, which offended his sense of order. Things looked up once he was on board. He had a window seat with sufficient legroom. and once they were airborne, the flight attendant brought him regular refills of coffee without needing to be asked. Knight fell asleep, but Reacher used the 2.5 hours they were in the air to think. He was basing a lot on one slip from Divine, her mention of the Department of Energy. He ran back over his conclusion that the Cone Dynamics report was connected to nuclear weapons. He had no reason to believe he was wrong, but no evidence that he was right. That seemed appropriate, in a way. Nuclear weapons always seem to conjure fear and paranoia in people. The rational part of Reacher's brain found that hard to understand. Only 2 had ever been used in anger. Fewer people had been killed by both of them combined than had died in many firebombings during World War II, or had starved and frozen in Leningrad, or had been murdered after the siege of Nanjing, or starved in Stalin's famines. He figured the reaction came from the unknown, the danger of dying years later of some hideous disease you had no idea you were incubating. Reacher didn't share that fear, but he did feel some unease. For him, it came down to the risk of human error and the consequences. There weren't just 2 bombs now. There were vast arsenals, capable of destroying the world many times over, and they were only a hiccup in an early warning system away from doing just that, or a tired eye mistaking a blip on a screen somewhere. He thought about all the near misses he'd read about. A Soviet guy named Petrov, who had suppressed an early warning report because his gut told him it was false. A miscalibrated upgrade to a radar system that made flocks of birds look like missiles in flight. And error wasn't the only danger. There was foul play. The Rosenbergs. And after them, the guy who stole the design for a centrifuge that could refine uranium, which doubled the number of nations with nuclear capability. He thought about Vidich, the rogue agent with secrets to sell, and wondered if he'd be remembered in the same way. Knight woke up as the plane started its descent. She switched her phone off airplane mode the moment the wheels touched the ground and checked for texts or voicemails. There was nothing. Reacher spotted a cluster of empty seats near a gate that was out of service. He steered Knight toward it, borrowed her phone, and tried wall work. Again, he got no reply. Knight said, "I hate this not knowing. Should we get a hotel or go straight to the hangar?" Reacher said, "Hangar." Knight led the way along another long corridor. They slalomed around the slower-moving travelers and dodged the knots of people spilling out of the little stores and cafes and bars that lined the route. They passed a sign warning them that they were leaving the secure zone, then started down an escalator. It was a long one, and it moved slowly. Reacher could see a series of baggage carousels stretching out along the hall at its base, and a wall of glass to its right with doors every few yards that led out to an access road. Reacher had to push his way through a gaggle of people at the bottom of the escalator. They were hanging around a stationary carousel. A monitor suspended above it flashed a message warning passengers to check luggage carefully before removing it, in case they were taking someone else's. Reacher said, "Does that really happen? Surely people know what their luggage looks like." Knight said, "It happens all the time. A lot of bags look similar. Some are identical. That's why some people attach colored straps or bright ribbons, to make their things easier to identify. Plus, people could be tired after a long flight, or stupid, or careless." Reacher shrugged. It seemed to him like another reason to avoid getting bogged down by possessions. They continued past the last carousel, looking for signs for the taxi area, and Knight's phone rang. It was Walwork, Reacher answered. Walwork said, "Got a hit. John Austin is due into Fort Lauderdale from Indianapolis in 35 minutes. He paused, then read out a flight number. Reacher thanked him, then took Knight's arm to stop her. They moved to the side and Reacher dialed Divine's number. This time she answered with a curt, "Yes." Reacher said, "Did you show Gibson's picture to Albatross's handler?" Divine took a moment, then said, "I did. So you know. I know. And I'm not happy. I didn't think you would be. Did you deploy to Fort Lauderdale? I'm not at liberty to... So, no. Why not? The justification was too thin. And thanks to you, I'm standing in the path of a Category 5 shitstorm. I'm not to blame. You should be thanking me for finding out before things got any worse. And as for justification, Vidic will be landing in Fort Lauderdale in half an hour. Send the police, at least. Notify TSA, airport security, someone. I'll do what I can. And Reacher, stay clear of this. Leave now. Leave where? The Fort Lauderdale airport. I know you're there. Reacher looked around for a trash can. He said, time for a new phone. Divine is using this one to track us. Knight said, what's the point? Are you going to buy another one every time you need to call her? Are you ever going to buy one? Reacher didn't reply. Knight grabbed the handset from him and said, give that to me. I need to buy more plane tickets. Whatever's the cheapest, just to get us airside, to see what happens with Vidic. Watch Kane get arrested, and if no one else is there to do that... They had drawn level with the last carousel, and Reacher was watching a lone suitcase rattle slowly around the oval track. Knight said, how did Divine seem? Is she going to do anything down here? Reacher said, they know they have a major PR disaster on their hands. That means people will fall into two groups, those who will roll up their sleeves and try to fix the problem, and those who will do whatever it takes to shift the blame onto someone else. I think Divine will roll up her sleeves, given the chance, but she's not in for an easy ride. I guess not. A couple of dirty cops came to light while I've been at the department. No work got done for weeks afterward. It was a festival of ass covering both times. No reason to assume it's any different at the Bureau. We'll soon know. If she can pull the right levers, Vidic and the others won't even make it off the plane. They'll have all the passengers stay in their seats after the plane has landed, then send in the local police. Maybe Homeland Security, if they have anyone close enough. Knight looked away. Reacher thought she looked disappointed at the prospect. The suitcase continued to circle the carousel. Reacher said, what's up with that? Could someone have forgotten to collect it? Left the airport without picking it up? Knight said, obviously. Why do you think they have left luggage offices? Anyway, who cares about some dumb suitcase? Reacher did, for a reason he couldn't quite put his finger on. He said, anyone could pick it up now, right? I could. I thought you were anti-belongings. Why would you need a suitcase? You don't have anything to put in it. What about the other carousels? Reacher pointed to the next in the line. People were swarming all around it, and the belt was jammed with bags and suitcases of all sizes and colors. What's to stop me taking that silver one right there? Maybe the owner? Or airport security? Come on, focus. We have to get airside. Find Vidic's gate before his plane lands. So enough with the questions. Back to security. There could be a line. You go. I'm staying here. What the... Why? Bizarre idea. I'll explain later if it pans out. Rendezvous here if we both strike out. Otherwise, at whatever hotel is closest to the airport. Knight checked her phone and said, there's a courtyard not far away. Good as any, I guess. Good hunting. Reacher stationed himself near the baggage reclaim monitor and waited for Vidic's flight number to join the list. After half an hour, he saw it next to Carousel 4. That was the carousel that was left. He checked the area around it. What he saw was not encouraging. There was no effective cover anywhere in the vicinity, other than a bunch of people, and Reacher was not built to blend into a crowd. He kept looking and spotted three yellow janitor's carts lined up in an alcove next to an accessible bathroom. One of them had a yellow bib hanging from a broom handle. Reacher strolled across to the wall. He glanced around. He saw no sign of any janitors, so he stepped in closer, took the bib, and slipped it on. There was no way it was going to fasten around his chest. But he figured that wouldn't matter. He had the perfect disguise. Everyone would look at him, but no one would see him. He could be wherever he needed to be. He released the cart's wheel lock and pushed it slowly to the far side of Carousel 5. It wasn't moving. No one was waiting nearby, so Reacher took a sweeper on a long handle from its holder at the side of the cart and began to make his way forward and then back, gathering litter as he went, all the time keeping Carousel 4 in his sight. As Reacher swept the floor, the crowd around Carousel 4 steadily grew. Soon it was two or three deep in places. Reacher scanned the faces methodically, left to right, front to back, and spotted Vidic. He was wearing a pirate's ball cap and had done something to his face to alter its contours. He had stuffed his cheeks with cotton wool, Reacher thought. Vidic had done the same kind of thing with his stomach. Rather than tall but stooped, he looked paunchy and squat. A klaxon sounded, and the belt began to move. A suitcase appeared at the top of a ramp in the raised center section, like the top tier of a wedding cake. It slid down and joined the main ramp. It was made of ribbed aluminum, and all kinds of bright stickers were plastered over its surface. A guy stepped forward and grabbed it. Vidic took out his phone. He did something to its screen, then held it low down by his side. A bunch of other bags tumbled down. Some were claimed right away. Others made their way around the circuit, ignored by everyone who was waiting. A couple were grabbed, then put back. Vidic didn't move. He made no attempt to take anything or make contact with anyone. The stream of new cases gradually slowed. Around half the people were still waiting, including Vidic. Then a backpack appeared. It teetered at the top of the ramp for a moment, then slid down. A rainbow ribbon was tied to one of its straps, and it had a Real Madrid baggage label hanging from a handle at the top. Vidic kept his arm by his side, but cocked his wrist so that his phone was facing out. Reacher guessed he was taking a photograph. Vidic relaxed his wrist, lowered the phone, watched the backpack as it made a complete circuit of the carousel, then turned and threaded his way through the crowd. Reacher saw him raise the phone again as he walked. He tapped the screen a couple of times, then slipped the phone into his pocket. Reacher slotted the sweeper back into its place on the cart and slipped off the bib. He took a step in the same direction as Vidic, then stopped. He could follow Vidic, or watch the backpack he had been so interested in. Letting Vidic escape after all the trouble he'd taken to find the guy seemed massively counterintuitive. But Reacher did it anyway. He stayed where he was and kept his eyes on the moving belt. The backpack made another circuit. Fewer bags joined it. More were taken. No one approached it. Reacher scanned the hall around him. He spotted Knight heading down the escalator. She reached the bottom, then headed straight for him. She took a spot by his side. Her shoulders were sagging, and she couldn't drag her gaze up from the ground. She said, "You struck out too? Let's hope our luck changes at the hangar." Reacher said Vidic was here, heavily disguised. I guess he slipped by you at the gate. Vidic was? Where is he now? He left. And you didn't follow him. Are you crazy? Reacher pointed out the backpack. Vidic waited till he saw that bag. He sent a picture of it to someone. Why would he do that? And why did you stay here? What's wrong with you? Watch this. A man had stepped forward. He was around 6'2 and was wearing a blue pinstriped suit and smart black shoes. He had blonde hair cut short and combed into a neat style. A tan leather briefcase was slung over his left shoulder. He watched the backpack as it approached, glanced around, then picked it up and walked away. This time Reacher did follow. Knight kept pace at his side. The guy in the suit was making for the escalator. He stepped onto it, stood politely to the side until he reached the top. Then he turned left and started across an enclosed bridge that led to a multi-story parking garage. At the far end, the space opened out into a square lobby to accommodate a trio of payment machines, as well as three doors leading to respective restrooms. The guy dodged to his left and disappeared through the center door. the accessible restroom. Reacher tried the handle. It didn't move.
Hey, a voice said from behind the door. Occupied.
Reacher looked at Knight and said, got a quarter? Knight pulled out her wallet, rummaged for a moment, then handed a coin to Reacher. He waited a couple of minutes, then forced it into the plastic groove beneath the door handle. He turned it, releasing the lock, opened the door, and stepped inside. The guy was sitting on the closed lid of the toilet. His phone was in his hand. He had a computer on his lap. A memory stick was attached on one side. The backpack he had taken from the carousel was lying at his feet with its main compartment unzipped. His briefcase was perched on the edge of the sink. The guy said, "You can't come in here. This bathroom is occupied." Reacher thought he could pick up a hint of an Eastern European accent. The guy's phone made a whooshing sound. Reacher closed the door behind him and said, "Who are you texting with?" The guy said, "Leave. Now. You can't be here." Reacher stretched out his left hand and took the phone. It made a different sound, a ping. The guy grabbed Reacher's wrist and gripped it tight. He pulled something from his suit coat pocket with his right hand. It looked like a pen until he hit the button at the top of its barrel. Then a spike shot out in place of a nib. It was 3 inches long, needle sharp, and made of some kind of laminate. Nothing that would raise any suspicions on an airport X-ray. The guy got to his feet, pushing with his legs to propel himself forward. His laptop slipped down and landed on the backpack, then slid onto the floor. He jabbed at Reacher's stomach. Reacher twisted his right hand around and blocked the blow with the back of his forearm. The sharpened tip bit into the dense material of his cast. A jolt of pain ran through his wrist. Reacher pivoted on his right heel and used the guy's own momentum to spin him into the wall. Reacher slipped the phone into his pocket, then brought his left hand back up, driving his fist into the underside of the guy's chin. The guy rocked back on his heels. His head smashed into the wall. He stayed upright, swaying on his feet. Reacher grabbed him by the throat. He squeezed, crushing the guy's larynx, and simultaneously lifted. The guy raised up on his toes. He couldn't breathe. He grabbed Reacher's wrist with both hands and tried to wrench it free. He failed. His eyes began to bulge. He flailed wildly with both arms. His hands were trying to grab Reacher's head. His fingers were searching for his eyes. Reacher brought his right knee up and crashed it into the guy's stomach. The remaining air was driven out of his lungs. Reacher twisted and pushed the toilet seat up with his foot. He relaxed his grip on the guy's throat. The guy slumped forward. Reacher slid his hand around to the back of his neck, pulled the guy forward, then pushed his face into the toilet bowl. He leaned down with all his weight. The guy's forehead was crushed against the porcelain. The tip of his nose was touching the water. Reacher said, "Who do you work for? Who bought that memory stick?" The guy pressed down against the floor with both hands. He was in good shape, wiry rather than outright muscle, but even so, he had no chance of lifting Reacher's weight. Reacher said, "A government, a middleman, who?" The guy kicked and scrabbled with his feet, but couldn't get any purchase. Reacher pressed the lever with his right hand. The toilet flushed. Water flooded down, filling the bowl. The guy's head was mostly blocking the pan, so the water almost overflowed. It took a good 30 seconds to work its way around the U-bend. The guy bucked and heaved and twisted, but Reacher didn't let up the pressure on the back of his head. Reacher said, "Who?" The guy coughed and gurgled, but said nothing intelligible. "Want me to do that again? I can keep going all day." The guy spat, then said, "Why not? Now I know I won't drown." Reacher pressed down on the lever again. The bowl filled. The guy struggled, but less violently than before. When the water subsided, he said something. 2 words. Reacher didn't recognize the language, but their meaning was clear. Reacher took a handful of the guy's hair, pulled him up into a kneeling position, then drove his knee into the guy's temple. The side of the guy's head smashed into the wall and he slumped down into the gap alongside the toilet bowl. Reacher dragged his body into the middle of the floor to make it easier to search him. He checked everywhere, right down to the heels of his shoes. He found a wallet with some paper money and 4 credit cards.
an Australian passport half full of stamps, which he guessed was a forgery, some keys. And that was it. Nothing useful. Which wasn't unexpected. Reacher checked the briefcase, then the backpack. Neither was helpful. Finally, he took the phone out of his pocket. He held it in front of the guy's face so that it unlocked, then read the conversation that unfurled on the screen. It started with a photograph of the backpack on the carousel, along with four digits. The combination for the bag's lock, Reacher guessed. It must have been sent by Vidic, although no name was displayed. Next was the guy's reply, an address. It was for the aircraft hangar at the executive airport that Walwark had previously given as the location of the suspicious gold. Vidic had replied with a whole string of letters and numbers and symbols. A password, Reacher guessed. He memorized it, then dropped the phone and smashed it with his heel. He took the memory stick and slipped it into his pocket. Then he propped the guy's computer against the base of the wall to form a triangle with the floor, and snapped it in half with the side of his foot. When Reacher came out of the bathroom, Knight had moved to the side to make it look like she was waiting for someone to finish in the men's room. A guy in a wheelchair was in line. He saw the guy in the suit lying on the floor and said, "What the?" Reacher said, "Call 911. He was looking at kiddie porn on his computer, wanted me to join in." The guy wheeled away fast. Reacher used Knight's quarter to relock the door from the outside, then beckoned her over. He borrowed her phone and called Divine. Divine's tone was no warmer than before. She opened with, "What?" Reacher said, "Vidic is in Fort Lauderdale, probably heading to a hangar at the executive airport." He gave her the address, "and send some guys to the regular airport as well. Vidic's contact is in the accessible bathroom at the end of the bridge leading to the parking garage." He slipped, hit his head. He won't be awake for a while. Chapter 34. The executive airport complex is easy to find your way around if you've been there before. It's less straightforward for first-timers because the buildings all look basically the same. They're lined up along one side of the runway, and their individual signs are small and use the same font and colors due to some local regulation. Vidic used the fact to his advantage. He gave his cab driver the address for the building next to the one he wanted, and as the guy crept along looking for street numbers, Vidic checked the parked cars and trucks for anyone keeping watch on the place. He only spotted one he was suspicious of, a panel van with a business name stenciled on the side, Crabtree and Watson Landscape Contractors. He Googled and found a website with the same name, but it felt a little generic to him. More like a placeholder than a real resource. He was happy about that. Assembling 720 gold bars in one place was the kind of thing that drew attention. That was to be expected. A couple of agents keeping an eye open was fine. A heavier presence would have been more worrying. Vidic stood in the shadows of the next hangar in line and waited for a suitable vehicle to come by. It was hot and humid outside of the cab's air conditioning, and his shirt was soon sticking to his back. A UPS van trundled into sight after a couple of minutes. He broke cover and kept pace with it, using its bulk to shield him from the landscaping van, and made it to the right hangar unseen. The building was divided into two sections. The left-hand part was smaller, about an eighth of the overall floor space. It was a combined reception and waiting area. There was a desk immediately inside the door where all the check-in and destination paperwork was taken care of. Beyond that were three discrete seating areas, each with eight chairs, so that passengers could be grouped together by flight. And at the back, there was a self-serve bar with coffee, tea, and snacks. Vidic smiled at the woman who was on duty at the desk and handed her a driver's license. He said, "Hi, John Austin. I'm here to check on a freight consignment." The woman checked the ID, looked up a record on her computer, then got to her feet. She passed the license back, took a bunch of keys from a drawer, and said, "Follow me, please." She led the way through a door in the right-hand wall into the hangar itself. A large scale was set up for weighing cargo, and behind that a plane was standing with its engine cowling removed for maintenance. The section Vidic was interested in was behind the plane, along the far wall. There was a line of mesh cages for securing freight that was awaiting transport or collection. 8 altogether. 3 were empty. He scanned the others as he approached. He identified the one that must be his. The one with 30 wooden crates, 7 inches deep by 5 inches wide by 6 inches tall. Small, but heavy. Vidic knew they would weigh more than 50 pounds each. The woman unlocked the padlock holding the cage door closed and said, "Take your time. Lock it when you're done." Vidic waited until the woman had left the hangar and crossed to a toolbox on wheels near the front of the plane. He took a screwdriver and went back to the cage. He opened the door and used the screwdriver to lever the lid off the nearest crate. He brushed back the packing straw and couldn't keep himself from grinning. Gold. Universal. Indestructible. Eternal. 24 bars per box. $78,000 per bar at current rates. Now all he had to do was move it before the untrustworthy bastards he'd sold the Cone Dynamics report to decided to double-cross him and take their assets back. He took one of the bars from the crate, replaced the lid, worked the lock, and went back to the reception area. He said to the woman, "Is Mr. McLeod available?" She said, "He's around somewhere, outside, checking on one of the planes, probably. Take a seat. I'll find him for you." Andrew McLeod was a short, squat man in his 30s who still hadn't learned that as the manager of the operation, he was supposed to delegate. He appeared in the hangar doorway 5 minutes later. He was wearing coveralls rolled down to the waist with the sleeves hanging loose, and a white shirt with a tie poked through between two buttons. Vidic followed him to the cargo area so that they could talk in private. He nodded toward the cage full of crates and said, "I need all those gone inside of 30 minutes. McLeod said, "No can do. Sorry. They weigh what? 1,600 pounds? Can't add them to another load, and I don't have a spare plane to take them on their own." "Are you sure?" Vidic pulled the gold bar out of his pocket. "Is that what I think it is? If you think it's a new Porsche, then yes." McLeod was silent for a moment, then said, "Any passengers?" Vidic said, 3. "How much do you all weigh?" 200, 130 maybe, and around 300. "Okay, I can make that work." "Where to?" "The Bahamas, Andros Island." "Fresh Creek?" "No, I'll give you the coordinates. It's a new strip, private. You won't find it on any maps." "Good deal. There's one other thing. I want you to send your receptionist home right away." "Why? What did she do wrong?" "Nothing. She seems like a good person." "One of my crew isn't. She doesn't need to be exposed to that." "If your guy's such an asshole, why do you hang around with him?" "Call it a marriage of convenience. One that's not going to last very long." When Vidic texted the hangar's address to Kane and Paris, he told them to take the kind of precautions he had, because the place was being watched. Kane did not do that. He got out of the cab, crossed the street, and knocked on the rear door of the landscaping van. He got no response, so he took hold of the handle and wrenched the door open. 2 guys were inside, sitting at a console with cameras hooked up to computer monitors and microphones feeding compact speakers. They were in their mid-30s, wearing shirts, ties, and shoulder holsters. They both went for their guns, but they weren't fast enough. Kane shot them both in the head with a silenced .22. Kane walked into the hangar and crossed straight to the cargo cage. He looked in at the wooden crates and said, "That's $56 million. I thought it would be bigger." Paris stopped in front of Vidic. She put her hand on his chest and said, "Everything went okay?" Vidic said, "Like clockwork. We're just waiting for the pilot to switch over one of the planes. We should be loading in 10 minutes. Out of here in 20. It would speed things up if we could drag those crates over to the door. I tried, but they're crazy heavy. He turned to Kane. Mind giving me a hand? Kane shrugged. Vidic moved to the side of the cage door and waited for Kane to move. Kane didn't move. He said, "So let me guess. Vidic, you make like you're going to push. I pull. I don't get anywhere because these damn things must weigh a ton. But while I'm giving it the good old college try, Paris whips out her little Walther and pops a .38 behind my ear." Paris pulled her PPK out of her purse and said, "That's pretty much what we were thinking, yeah. But if you'd rather take it straight in the face, that's fine too." She raised the gun and lined it up on the bridge of Kane's nose. Kane said, "If today's my day to go, then so be it. But maybe hold that thought for a second. Wait till you have all the facts." "I have all the facts I need. I pull the trigger, the world has one fewer asshole in it, and I'm $9 million richer. Am I missing anything?"
"Only that your boyfriend is an FBI agent."
Paris lowered the gun.
"Wait, what?
I don't have a boyfriend."
"Who's an agent?"
Kane stepped to the side.
"Vidic."
Vidic reached for his gun, but he didn't have it. He'd come directly from the airport. So he said, "Paris, shoot him already." Kane said,
"Notice he's not denying it."
Vidic said, "Of course I'm not denying it. It's a joke. You're just desperate to save your own miserable skin. You'd say anything." Paris raised her gun and pointed it at Kane. Then she lowered it again. She said,
"I want proof."
"You have 30 seconds. Vidic said, "This is ridiculous. Gibson was the agent. We all know that."
Kane said, "Gibson was on board way before you. How could he have been an undercover agent so long and not have done anything?"
Vidic said, "Not an agent then, an informer, whatever they call it. He flipped, wandered out, did a deal."
Kane shook his head. "I knew Gibson. He was no rat. But you?"
Vidic took a step toward him.
"I'm no rat." Kane said, "You know what they say. If you're explaining, you're losing."
Paris said, "Stop this. I want proof, not insults." Kane said, "Ask your boyfriend how he was able to set this deal up so fast." Paris said, "He's not my boyfriend." Vidic said, "Easy. I have connections."
Kane said, "What kind of connections?"
"You deal with fences. Fences sell art,
not nuclear secrets."
Vidic said, "Right. Fences sell art, and they know people who sell all kinds of other things, including secrets. Like I said, it all comes down to connections."
"Connections? Like foreign spies?"
"Any kind of connections.
Warhol one day, warheads the next. I call bullshit."
Paris put the gun in her purse and walked up to Vidic. She said, "Ivan, look me in the eye. Tell me it's not true."
Vidic said, "It's not true."
Then he looked away. "Liar." Paris slapped him across the face. "What happens next? A bunch of agents kick the doors in and drag us off to jail? Or will they wait till we're in the Bahamas, where it'll be easier for us to get shot resisting arrest?"
"Nothing like that."
Paris didn't reply. She couldn't bear to look at him. Vidic said, "Okay, I was an agent."
Kane said, "You still are an agent."
"Actually, no. As far as the Bureau is concerned, I'm dead."
Paris said, "That's why you wanted the phosphorus. So they'd think Gibson's ashes were yours. And you tricked me into helping you. This situation just keeps getting better.
Look, does any of that matter? We're here. The gold is here. We did that together. Let's not throw it away over some stupid..."
"It's not stupid."
A red dot appeared on Vidic's forehead, and the next instant the back of his skull was torn off. The cage next to theirs was sprayed with blood and brain. Then Paris heard the sound, a gunshot. She spun around and saw Kane holding his .22. Kane said, "There's your extra 9 million. I never liked Vidic, but you, I can see a future for us. On the island, on the beach, in the bedroom. I'd rather eat crushed glass. You'll come around." Kane took out his phone and took a picture of Vidic's body. An FBI agent selling nuclear secrets. It's the ultimate get-out-of-jail-free card. Go find a container, a jar or something. We need his blood, his DNA. Find something with today's date and get me his phone. Paris picked up Vidic's phone, handed it to Kane, turned, and started toward the reception area. Paris? She stopped. What? You're Walther. Drop it and kick it away. Chapter 35. Paris returned a couple of minutes later. She had a folded newspaper under her arm, and she was carrying a tiny glass jar and a teaspoon. She said, "This had jam in it, from the snack counter. I washed it." Kane said, "Fill it." Paris took a deep breath, stooped down, scooped 3 spoonfuls of Vidic's blood into the jar, then screwed on the lid. She handed it to Kane. "You say gross things, but it's an act, isn't it? It has been all along." Kane shrugged.